from Jivadharma. I kind of forgot what chapter it is. The number. I don't have this. Well, I'll find it in a second. It's called Vaidhi Bhakti is Eternal. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Vigyanatimarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Saksuramutam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurudeva Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Tathakti Stapadantikam. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Vedana Srivasade Gaura Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare
Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. So greetings from Bhakti Center in New York. Really wonderful program yesterday, my kind of coming back program. And I was quite impressed with the quality of the audience. You know, this we're doing a program on Thursday. I suppose more people will come tomorrow. And then another one Sunday morning, which is also Gaur Purnim. But the quality of the people in the audience was really wonderful. It's just kind of, and even for me, I didn't know half the audience. So it was really nice to be back. I did a little walk around the Lower East Side. It's amazing how many people say Hare Krishna spontaneously. Because this is it's kind of like a holy place, the Lower East Side. It's the siddha pit for Prabhupada's staying in 26th Second Avenue, Tree at Tompkins Square Park. Prabhupada's lotus feet walk this area. It's a real bhav. It's a real remembrance of this is where the Hare Krishna movement started, the Hare Krishna tree. There's a tree with a little flag. This is Hare Krishna on it. The Hare Krishna tree. So this is the very inspirational place for spreading Sanatana Dharma. It's just the amount of people that are interested is kind of phenomenal. Phenomenal. Now we're starting our Jivadharma studies, and we took a break when I was in Europe. And just thank you all for coming back. I think one of the successes of this program is the steadiness. It's habitual. I do it all the time. And I think that's why programs like this become successful. I'm very committed to it because I believe strongly in the principle that, you know, the Shastra, that without getting good ideas, which come from Shastra, you can't change your thoughts. And if you don't change your mind, you'll never change your life. So I believe in it. And that's why I'm in this path, both to change my own life and to change the life of others. And now my life is becoming changed. I'm responsible to help change the life of others. And this is the way it's done. You know, it's one of the most important ways it's done. It's why Vyasadeva wrote the Bhagavatam. Because to hear about Krishna, the philosophy of Krishna, is the best way to humble us and get rid of the false ego by becoming attached to the ultimate reality and becoming attached to our part in the ultimate reality. And our part in the ultimate reality is the real ego, a servant of Krishna. We have to embrace that. We have to embrace the desire to serve Krishna, the desire to be his servant. And that's antithetical now to the defenses of our false ego and the promotion of the world, which is so deeply embedded. It's so deeply embedded within our hearts in so many subtle ways. How many samskaras that we accrued life after life to be seeking things to endorse the false ego and increase our desire to be the center. How many impressions are in the consciousness? So it's very, very difficult to navigate through that. I think there's a story of Alexander the Great or something. There's something with this Gordian knot. And, you know, there's some benediction if you can untie this incredible knot or something. Mm-hmm. And Alexander the Great said, you know, I can do it. They said, yeah, and he got his sword. And he's like, whoom. He cut it. So that's like bhakti. We can't navigate through the full, through our samskaras and our misconceptions. We can't untie that. We can't adopt the processes of untying the misconceptions. We work right at the root of it, which is the false ego, by surrendering to Guru and Krishna and changing the conceptions of our lives. And by becoming attracted to our eternal position as Krishna's servant, developing faith in being Krishna's servant. And it's hard because our minds are working for ego, for position, for reputation, for profit, admiration, distinction. But we're working for that. That's what sex desire announces. The whole world is we're so entangled in those things. It's not easy, but the easiest process is the process of the heart, which is to surrender and get a taste for that and just be peaceful with the world moving around us against our desires but for our benefit and surrendering to it. Every moment is an opportunity for service. There's no moment that's an opportunity for supremacy, for control. So I believe in this. I believe that the people who actually regularly hear these sanghas, they actually transform. And I've seen it. And those who don't have time or have no interest, they don't really make much attention. But this is the whole process. What is Guru disciple? It's a teacher. You don't learn from the teacher. It doesn't matter if you have a teacher. You got to take his courses. You got to study his subjects. And you have to be convinced. You have to have the doubts removed. You need knowledge and faith to move forward with strength and Krishna consciousness. So, anyway, I like to keep it steady. I think we missed about two classes because I was traveling. I don't like to miss the continuity, especially since I only lecture once every week on this. So it may take this class to just get back to continuity, but we know that following the lives of people that are coming to Krishna consciousness in this wonderful novel history, whatever, by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, We're following how these people are coming. We made the point before. It really is. It makes almost like the ultimate treatise on bhakti philosophy. Bhakti philosophy is called tattva. Tattva means various subjects. If you weaken a subject, it means you don't have the right understanding and faith in a particular aspect of reality that you need to embrace to go forward with strength in Krishna consciousness. The story is of various people coming to Krishna consciousness and therefore requiring various tattvas as subjects to clear their doubts. So now we're up, it's one man, Lahari. He joined the ashram, he's from an aristocratic Brahmin family, his family becomes upset, they come to the ashram. And they send his son, who happens to be a logician. His son happens to be a logician, and he teaches logic and things like that. So his son wants him to come home, and that the crux of the discussion here is that Lahari, he's in a retired life, obviously, if his son has grown up, and he's serious about Krishna consciousness. He understands that that's the ultimate goal. And other duties are subservient to it, because other duties only have value in bringing you to that. So you have family responsibility, you have social responsibility, but you have that in relationship to realizing God. And when you're fully in a position of surrender, realizing God, then you're not obligated by any other responsibilities if they're not supportive of that endeavor. So he's no longer obligated. Devarshi, I don't remember it. So, so the main crux that he's trying to explain to his son is that the son's saying, come home, we're religious. And he's explaining, well, it's not Vaishnavism, not eternal religion. It's material religion. It's a different thing. It's not just the form of the activity, it's the consciousness in which you stop. But this is the point, this is the main point that's trying to be cleared up. This is son is religious. They worship the deity and they chant their prayers. He's saying his father, he said, well, what is the difference between what you do and I do? It's no difference. Come home. And Lahari now, he's just explained the point that there's two types of activities. There's ones that are connected with this world right as it is now, which is called Rika, and those who aspire for superior attainments, which is called Paramattika. And those who aspire for Paramattika, superior attainments, future attainments, there are three categories. There's the Siddhi Kami, the Gyananishtas, and the Ishanugatas. So he's explaining, because actually, Devi Das specifically asks questions in relationship to deity worship. So he said, yes, the people who are the Siddhi Kamis, they want perfection. They perform materialistic activity called karma kanda. You perform different sacrifices, different, right? You get different powers. Within that, there's a worship of the deity, but in that type of conception, Ishvara or God is subservient to karma. That actually karma is absolute. So if you perfect the different actions in the world that invoke, you know, the world is actually meant for liberation, but it rewards sacrifice with powers. Sahayagya Pradashi Shra Parovacha Ananapa Savishyatvam Asia Bhosha. In Bhagavad Gita, third chapter, Krishna says, I send forth demigods, and you know, sacrifice, perform that, and you get all desirable things, and you get liberation. So the world responds sacrifice. Even if the sacrifice is motivated, you're still giving up for a second the consciousness that that I am the center and the objects are meant for me. You somehow perform sacrifice. And because people have materialistic objectives, they won't perform any spiritual activity unless there's a material reward. So the universe, actually, the people who know the science and art, responds to sacrifice by fulfilling your material desires. So the people who are the siddhi kamis, they perform different karmas. They perform different types of karmas, different activities. But their conception of Ishwar or God is somehow not really complete. They kind of accept it, but it's subservient, so they don't. Then there's the Gyaninishas, those who want impersonal liberation. They just worship Ishvara, or the deity, to achieve Brahmagyan, oneness to God. And they don't even really believe absolutely in the form of the deity. It's some kind of temporary activity. It's Nityaka Dharma rather than Nitya Dharma. Your worship of the deity, it may be the form of the deity, but it's Nityaka, it's temporary. It's not what you do eternally, it's what you do to achieve something else which you think is eternal. Then he said there's this Ishadugatas, those who worship God, Ishwar, they worship Vishnu. For love and devotion, it's a plea, and it's the nature of the soul, and it's the eternal activity. Therefore, he explains to his son, I don't want to go home. You may have the deity worship, but the consciousness is not pure bhakti, and that's what I'm cultivating now, and that's what the goal of life is, and that's what my objective is. So, Devi Das responds, yes, if one worships the Sri Vigraha of Bhagavan, but does not accept that Vigraha is eternal, then it is not worship of an eternal object. However, can't one adopt the temporary means of worship to attain the eternal truth, which is ultimately distinct from any temporary forms? He's getting right into it with his father. Yes, okay. The deity is not eternal. We don't accept the deity as eternal. That's what I agree with you. But we're searching for something that is. Which is distinct from those temporary forms. So he said, even if that were the case, such temporary worship cannot be eternal dharma. So even if you say that's true, and I'm not, of course he's not accepting that, but if you say it's true, then still the worship of your deity is not nitya dharma. Nitya dharma is the worship of the eternal form. Eternal Vigraha is performed in Vaishnava Dharma. In Vaishnava Dharma, that type of worship is not to a temporary form. That form is eternal. And that's what Vaishnava Dharma is. I'm a Vaishnava. And I see the form of the deity as eternal, and I see my worship as eternal, because in perfection, I still do that. That's the nature of bhakti. In perfection, you still do it. In Jnana, in perfection, you don't still do it. In Karma Kanda, you don't still do it. We still do it because it's the eternal activity of the soul, and that's the nature of bhakti. Bhakti means to please, and your goal is to please. So there's no difference between the means and the ends, only the ends, and is pure. But it's the same activity with the same consciousness. It's meant to please. Devi Das, but Sri Vigraha that is worshipped is fashioned by a human being, so how can it be eternal? In fact, not many people know this, but it's very clearly stated in the Bhagavatam that in the Sakya Yuga there was no deity worship. Because people were so pure that they manifested God in their heart. And therefore, you would worship other people who are pure. You didn't need to worship the deity. They were just people who were pure in their hearts. But as soon as Treta Yuga comes, people are less qualified. So people have more doubts if God is fully manifested in their hearts. And therefore, the great sages manifested the forms of the deities so that people would have an absolute object of worship, which was God. That wasn't dependent on the purity of any human being, which they didn't have faith on in the first place. Lahari, the Vigraha worship by the Vaishnavas is not like that. Bhagavan is not formless like Brahma. On the contrary, he is the all-powerful, concentrated embodiment of eternal knowledge and bliss. It is that Satchitananda Guna Vigraha that is worship, deity of the Vaishnavas. See, now he's saying, no, the Vigraha is eternal. And that's our concept. Our concept is God has created certain sounds, certain materials, when are formed in a particular way, with the blessings of a pure devotee, can become God-ized, can become God. And it's a form, and it's a form that's eternal. Because God is a person. He's an eternal person. The worship of him is eternal. It is that Satchitananda, that Bhagavan's transcendental form of eternity, bliss, and knowledge is revealed in the pure consciousness of the jiva, and then it is reflected in the mind. The external form of the deity is fashioned according to this transcendental form revealed in the mind. By the power of bhakti yoga, the Satchitananda form of Bhagavan is manifested in the deity. So this isn't really what the deity is. It manifests first in the pure heart of the jiva, then it's reflected in their mind, and then the eternal form is fashioned out of that. What actually manifests and realizes within the heart of the pure devotee. And then by the power of bhakti yoga, in that form, God fully manifests. And when the devotee takes darshan of the deity, that deity unites with the transcendental form of Bhagavan that the devotee sees in his heart. So you see it externally, you see it in your heart, it merges. So Krishna consciousness means first we manifest the form of God in our heart, and then we see it external as the deity. And then they merge into one absolute eternal reality that we worship. The deities that the Gyanis worship, however, is not like that. Because it's not fashioned from the heart. It's fashioned from the mind. So it's so different. The presence of God is not manifest there. They think the deity is a statue made of material elements, but that the state of Brahma is present in it while they worship. It becomes a mere material statue again after they have finished their worship. So they install the form, and after the worship, it's just a material form, which is not what the Vaishnavas feel. The Vaishnavas feel that God is actually manifest there, and he's eternally manifest there. It is a deity form. Now you should consider the difference between these two conceptions of deities and their respective method of worship. When one obtains Vaishnava Diksha, by the mercy of a genuine guru, you will be able to observe the result of both and understand this difference correctly. So when you're inspired by the proper conception of reality, guru tattva, the manifestation of God to attract us back to his lotus feet that appears to a particular person, when you have that sambandhagyan, then you can understand the difference between these. You don't understand the difference because you haven't had a bona fide guru. So you don't understand. When you actually realize Krishna consciousness, you can actually see truth. We discussed this in Bhakti Loka. Knowledge is a byproduct of the soul. So when someone becomes pure, the right realizations and the right conceptions, they automatically manifest. And therefore you're able to make a distinction that this is the eternal form of God. And this is manifest from the heart of the pure devotee. And in response, God appeared externally to satisfy that form of the mind. Devi Das, yes, now this all makes sense to me. Now I see that the Vaishnavas are not just fanatics driven by blind faith, rather they're endowed with subtle and discriminating insight. So we're not on the path of Gyan. We're just glorifying the holy name. So sometimes it can be misunderstood that devotees are not deep or scholarly or so you see, no, the Vaishnavas are very subtle and discriminating insight. And there are major differences of worship of the Sri Murti and the temporary worship, an imaginary form of God that has been imposed on a material object. It's different. It depends where it comes from. And some of us, it's knowledge in the heart. You can actually directly perceive that. It's just so, it's so confirmed subtly. This is God. I will think about this for some days. Father, today my greatest doubt has been dispelled. Now I can emphatically say that the Gyanis' worship is merely an attempt to cheat Bhagavan. I will submit this topic to your feet again at a later time. So, after saying this, Devi Vidyaratna and Shambhu departed to their residential quarters. They returned to Lahari Mahasai's Kutir in the late afternoon, but there was no opportunity to discuss these topics further, for at that time, everyone was immersed in Hare Nam Sankirtan. So it almost supersedes any intellectual discussion, because it's Pradeksha Bhagavan Dharma, the ninth chapter, it's directly perceivable, directly observable. The following afternoon, everyone seated themselves in Paramahamsa Babaji's bower. Devi Vidyaratna and Shambhu sat next to Lahari Mahasai. Just then, the Kazi from the village of Brahman Pushkarini arrived. When the Vaishnavas saw him, they all stood up to offer respect, and the Kazi also greeted the Vaishnavas with great pleasure and then sat in the assembly. Charyamam Vijanaya, he's the king. They respect him. He's the oppressor. He's the, you know, Muslim king. But still, the culture is, it's, the culture is so inclined to the respected authority. It's everything in one's life promoted that. The quality of people supported that. So this doubts, you know, the extensive doubts that we have today, those kind of mental gymnastics that people have to go through, it's a product of the present age. Mm-hmm. Paramahamsa Babaji, you are blessed. You are a descendant of Chan Kazi, who was an object of mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Please kindly bestow your mercy upon it. So this day, the descendants of the Chan Kazi by his samadhi, they're very blissful. They're like, you know, there are people in the Dham that are Muslim, but they're not Muslims, they're Vaishnava. I could just think of the people in Vrindavan I worked with that have still been serving the Krishna Balarama here for 40 years. The Kazi said, by the mercy of Sri Mahaprabhu, we have become the objects of mercy of the Vaishnavas. Garanga is the lord of our life, we do not do anything without first offering our dandanat pranams to him. So his descendants of the Muslim king, he should stop the kirtan, and then it's Lord Chaitanya organized the first civil disobedience because it was not legal to go out. So he went out by kirtan, and he went to the Chandasi, who came to Shubhas Angam and broke the Madanga, which Lahari Mahasai was a learned scholar of the Farsi language, and he had studied the 30 Sipadas of the Quran and many books of the Sufis. He asked the Qazi, according to your ideology, what is meant by mukti? So it's so broad. Now the tattva, now a tattva that applies to someone who's read the Quran to clear their doubts to become a Vaishnava. What you refer to as the jiva, individual soul, we call ru. This ru is found in two conditions. Ru, vijarad, the conscious or liberated soul, and ru, takibi, the conditioned soul. What you refer to as spirit, we call mujarad, and what you refer to achit, matter, we call jizm. Mujarad is beyond the limitations of time and space, but jizm is subject to time. So yeah, he says we just have different terms for the same thing. We just call it this, you call it this. The concept is the same. Mujarad is beyond the material. Okay, the conditioned souls, ru, tarkibi, or buddhajiv, as a material mind that is full of ignorance, mal foot. The liberated souls, ru, mujarad, are pure and aloof. From all these three contaminations, they reside in the spiritual abode, which is known as alam al-masal. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, right? He knew everything. Right? He knew everything. It's a Muslim country. You have to know these things. The Ru becomes pure through gradual development of Ishya, prema. There is no influence of matter, jism, in the abode where Khoda, God, brought the prophet Paigambar Shahid. Yet even there, the Ru remains a servant of Banda, and the Lord is the master. Therefore, the relationship between Banda and Khoda is eternal, and liberation is actually the attainment of this relationship in its pure form. The Quran and the literature of the Sufis explain these conclusions, but not everyone can understand them. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu mercifully taught Chankazi all these points, and since that time, we have become unalloyed bhaktis. So Mahaprabhu delivered the Muslims. He explained to them really what the essence of the Quran is. Islam means surrender to God. Anyway, I have an audience here, Alex. Yasser Arafat. You heard of him? He was the president of Palestine. He was the founder of the Palestine Liberation Army, the PLO. His right-hand man became a Vaishnava. I used to love this guy, man. He was, like, amazing. And he would go into Muslim communities to preach. But because he came from that culture, he became a fanatic Hare Krishna. And he wanted to march on Mecca and establish Khorasan. He would travel all around India preaching as a form of mullah. Lahari, what is the primary teachings of the Quran? According to the Quran, the Lord's personal abode, which is the highest attainment in the spiritual world, is known as Behesht. The is a fact that there is no formal worship there, yet life itself is a worship. Is worship ibadah. Residents of that abode are immersed in transcendental bliss through seeing the Lord. This is the very same teaching that had been presented by Gauranga Mahaprabhu. Lahari, does the Quran accept that the Lord has a transcendental form? Kazi, the Quran states that the Lord has no form. But Sri Gauranga Dev told Shankazi that this teaching of Quran means that the Lord cannot have a material. It's just like a classic example here. What is the opposite of poor? It's not no money, it's rich. So what's the opposite of material form? It's not no form. It's spiritual form. So the Lord cannot have a material form. It doesn't mean he has no form. It means he has a spiritual form. It does not preclude the existence of his pure spiritual form. Paigambar Shahib saw the divine loving form of the Lord in accordance with his level of eligibility. The transcendental moods and sentiments that are characteristic of the other rasas remain hidden from him. Lahavi, what is the opinion of the Sufis in this regard? Kazi, they adhere to the doctrine of Ana Al-Haq, which means I am Koda. The Sufi doctrine of Islam is exactly the same as the Advaita doctrine. This is what we call the Gorfather, the Sufis. But, yeah. Lahari, are you a Sufi? No, we are unadulterated devotees. Gauranga is our life. The discussion went on for a long time, and finally, Fuzzy Shahib offered his respects to the Vaishnavas and departed. Harinam Sankirtan followed him. After which the assembly dispersed. Thus ends the fifth chapter of Jivadharma called Vaidhi Bhakti's Eternal. Anyway, I'm not going to go on to the sixth chapter today. I'll stop for questions. I'm also quite fatigued. I don't know if I'd last for mine, but I can go through some questions. Any questions? Anybody like to say hello? Oh, I got to.
Jai Maharaj, Sri Hare Krishna.
Anybody like to ask any questions?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. This is Gail.
Hi, Bo. Gail. Okay, one second, Gail. Gail?
Mm-hmm.
Gail, what's your question?
This class was so dense. I will definitely have to listen to it about five times. But what is that going on?
What do you mean?
You don't hear?
What?
Oh, it's a bad echo.
An echo? Let me try something.
Is this better?
It may be. I think so. Yeah. Yeah. I was saying that, boy, I will have to listen to your class about five times because it was so dense, so much stuff. I was confused about it. But... Anyway,
I confused everyone. I was pretty tired today. It was hard to really wrap my mind around it the way I like. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I had a couple questions. One was, you know, in Vaishnavism, the deity is fashioned after the realized form of God in the heart of the pure devotee. I think you were explaining
yes.
like that. And so,
right,
but,
that's what it says.
But is that, I mean, it seems like today almost kind of anybody makes a deity and then we bring it home and worship it.
But even that anyone can have a deity, still the matter is God has to manifest yourself in the heart first. Otherwise, how will you be attracted to the deity? So that's actually still the way. You have to really bring God into your heart and then search for the outside.
Uh-huh.
There's no other way to do it. Otherwise, when people don't do that, the deity just becomes a statue.
Yeah.
A mantelpiece,
yeah.
A paperweight. Everyone
yeah.
gets gourmet Thai deities and then they just stay in the corner. And
yeah.
then they don't worship them as God.
So you should if you're looking to worship a deity, you should be
first
attracted.
See who you love in the heart. Yes, you should see who you're attracted to in the heart. Sure, yes.
And so you'll be attracted to one form of deity and not another. Like you know, I mean, not just because it's called Gaudiya.
You'll be attracted to at least one form. Yes. Radha
okay.
Krishna, Gaurini Thai. It's fact. I mean, I'm not attracted to worshiping Lakshmi Narayan, Lord Shiva. Some people
yeah, but,
are.
But Maharaj, I mean, even beyond that, okay, there's, for example, there may be so many deities out there called Radha Krishna, you know? But.
Oh, so you mean like you? Yeah, so. Yeah, I mean,
but,
that's a certain proclivity, but the basic thing is when one takes initiation, they get Bhagavad Sutta. Yeah, and that's one of the things of divine knowledge. You get the form of God in which you are to aspire for. That's what comes.
Mm-hmm.
So the basic form is Radha Krishna. Now you're saying, is there an individual taste? I think it's nice
yeah.
to do it that way. You know, I think it's nice to do it that way, to pray to God and see. Really, really pray to him and see where the form manifests to you in a way that really touches your heart and connects you eternally, the eternal reality of the divine in a particular form. I think that's legitimate, yes.
Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it happens that a deity, the physical manifestation of a deity gets destroyed, but that doesn't mean that the deity itself is destroyed because that deity still exists in your heart, right?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it then what's destroyed is matter, not spirit. If somehow that happens, a deity is destroyed, but it's not destroyed because that's not the deity. The deity has left that form.
Yeah.
Because I know one temple that in an earthquake the deities were destroyed.
I know,
I know
thinking about that one.
I know
that
the devotees worshiped that deity with such love. It was their life. They were brokenhearted, but at the same time, with sincerity and wish worship, the same form will manifest again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah.
I just got hitched when you said that the deity that got destroyed was matter, and we're told that is not, the deity form is not matter.
I'm just saying what happens is the form becomes godized.
Yeah.
Right? It's like the iron in fire, it becomes fire. You know? But it's the fire that's the fire of the metal. So the deity form becomes God-ized. It becomes Krishna. But in one sense, it's not the material thing that manifested. It's what energized it. So if the material thing that became that disappears, it can be energized again in a different form, but mm-hmm. from the same heart that manifested the original form.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, thanks, Gail. Anybody
you.
Else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, it's Hanan, obeisances.
Hanan, Hare Krishna. Greetings from New York.
Thank you so much for doing this Sangha. It's really become a nice part of my devotional life. And whenever I have a chance, I get a lot of nourishment from listening to it.
Hanan, I'm so happy that you could listen. And that you relish. It's so important to me that there are very sincere listeners. It's the listeners that draw out Krishna from the heart of a person. So it's great to have good listeners.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, I'm going to go now. I have to go now.